Brothers and sisters, we now come to item two on our agenda. You're going to need the paper GS2043. And I now call upon the chair of the business committee to introduce this item. You may speak for up to 10 minutes.
Boys, Oxford 186, and there are still two of me. Welcome to the business committee report. It's been quite a long week in the Church of England, and longer for some of you than for me. Now that we are here, I trust that we are come to take counsel, whatever way we can, in order that we may continue to learn together ways we might live in mutual love and respect, focused on God's kingdom. I'm sure that many of you are thinking right now how facile that sounds. Words are cheap. But in truth, we all know that the actions and conversations that make these words a reality are costly and at the deepest level. I have no doubt that this will be a costly group of sessions for everyone, and I want to thank you in anticipation and assure you of my prayers and those of the community of St. Anselm who will be praying for us throughout this week. I'm grateful to them and to Michael Gisborne, especially for that masterly leading of our opening worship, for ensuring that we are enabled to worship and pray together. Later this afternoon, we'll debate a motion on the anniversary of the Reformation. Our debate on the referendum last July reminded us of the continuing importance of our relationships with partner churches, with whom we share parts of our history. As the most influential change movement in Christian history, the Reformation provides a background for our commitment to seek renewal and reform in the Church of England in the 21st century. Whilst recent headlines have been almost exclusively about GS 2055, I urge you not to be deflected from spending time, energy, and enthusiasm on our consideration of GS 2056, Setting God's People Free, an important aspect of our work together. I'm privileged in my diocese and the parishes of my team to work alongside talented and committed people whose vocation is to serve the kingdom as members of the Laos 7 days a week. This debate on Thursday demands our serious attention as members of Synod, and not only on the floor of the chamber, but in taking responsibility for it across the church. Also on Thursday, we will have the opportunity to hear from the Secretary General of the Anglican Communion. This will be Archbishop Josiah's first address to Synod since he took office in 2015. I often find myself saying to you that we have important legislation to consider, and this group of sessions is no exception in this regard, with a significant list of legislation, some of it arising out of simplification, so of course it may appear complicated. Please help us to ensure that this, our bread and butter business, gets the attention it deserves in this busy and possibly emotive synod. With regard to Wednesday's business on GS 2055, I want to tell you that the material for the group work will be available from your diocesan post trays from Tuesday morning. I've always been of the opinion that good group work forms the basis for good debate. There are some people who find groups easier, and there are some conversations that are more easily had in groups. Many of you have made me aware of your misgivings about this particular group work, but I would encourage you, if you feel able, to take your concerns to the groups and share them as openly and honestly as you can in preparation for the Take Note debate later in the afternoon. I want to thank those of you who have, in one way or another, been in touch over the past week or so. But it's important to remind you that once the agenda is published, the business committee no longer has the authority to change it. So whilst I always enjoy hearing from you, the chair of the business committee cannot often help. As with each group of sessions, it's my duty to remind you in particular of our security policy. I'd ask you to familiarise yourself with this and make sure you refer any of visitors or guests you are bringing to Synod to the policy as well. As always, please don't leave bags or possessions unattended. The business committee next meets in March, when it will carry out its annual review of Synod policies and procedures, in particular the policy on fringe meetings, which includes requirements on health and safety, dignity at work, and safeguarding. I want to finish with some words of thanks. It is enormously helpful for the chair of the business committee to have the advice and support of a dedicated team. Jackie Phillips, the clerk to the Synod, the legal office, Nick Hills and Andrew Brown in particular. I'm really conscious of the privilege of having worked with these talented and committed staff and with my elected colleagues on the business committee, past and present. As this term of office comes to an end for me, I want simply to record my thanks to them and to all of you. I beg to move the report of the Business Committee, GS 2043, standing in my name.
Item two is now open for debate. We've got quite a packed and tight agenda this afternoon, so I'm going to set a 3-minute speech limit from the outset so that we can hear as many speeches as possible.
Ozanne Oxford 379. What takes a lifetime to earn yet can be spent in a second? What is completely priceless and yet can never be bought? Trust. And right now I suggest that this synod has a trust problem. Let's be honest, the account has been pretty overdrawn for some time, but now many of us, following the publication of the House of Bishops report on same-sex relationships, we believe it's now gone overdrawn. It's for this reason I would like to call for the group work to be cancelled on Wednesday afternoon in order to facilitate a longer take-note debate and a potential following motion. I do not trust that the group work will serve as well, and this is for three reasons. Firstly, because, like the shared conversations, there is no formal reporting mechanism which ensures that all the bishops actually hear what is being said. Yes, they can go through the motions of listening, but as we now have proof, it appears to make very little difference to what they actually decide. It would be far better for us to speak on the record in this chamber, in the presence, I hope, of all diocesan bishops, with a formal document as proof for generations to come of what has actually been said. Secondly, I do not trust the groups to be safe, particularly for those of us who have already made ourselves so vulnerable throughout this process. I've taken part in three such sets of conversations. I've been told it would have been better that I died in hospital or committed suicide, but I'm going to hell and I'm taking others with me. Safe? The bishops have decided to chair these groups themselves, meaning that we will have a postcode lottery, sorry bishops, but it's true, as to who we're asked to be being vulnerable with. As a matter of principle, I refuse to partake in a process where abuse is tolerated and people like me are asked to make ourselves even more vulnerable with our abuser. Finally, I believe the bishops owe it to all those who have come here keen to speak, to sit and listen to the anger, the frustration, and the incredulity, and yes, the pain. Debates aren't just about making arguments. They are also a mechanism for people to know they've been heard. If we have 3 hours of speeches that are similar, so be it. Perhaps then the bishops will start to understand that there are many across the country who so far have felt unheard. Only the presidents I know can make this decision now. I hope they will reflect well and consider what is most likely to enable deposits in a bank account of trust that has gone through one of the biggest financial crises in recent history.
Emma Forward, followed by the prolocutor. Thank you on that point of order. I understand it is being sorted out as quickly as possible. I entirely agree with the comments. Emma Forward, followed by the prolocutor.
Can anyone tell me if it would be easier using that microphone? Can't hear me? Shall I try the other one? Emma Forward, 309 Exeter. Is that any better? is that any better echo-wise? Yes? I'll try to speak slowly. When it comes to the House of Bishops report on sexuality, I think the palpable tension in the air is in large part due to the timing, something that the House of Bishops and the Business Committee might think more carefully about in the future. The shared conversations were a great opportunity to get to know each other, but there were some flaws in that people had particular expectations going into the process. The secrecy around the arrangements of the group work in July didn't help to clarify where these talks were going and what we might expect, if anything, at the following synod. The conclusions which arose from each group and were shared with all of us in the final session were possibly misleading. There certainly was not a consensus that the best way forward was a report to be debated in the following February. The unfortunate outcome of a report debated here in the sessions immediately after the shared conversations is that people have assumed that the House of Bishops report is a direct result of the shared conversations process and feel disappointed if this report does not lead to the outcome they were hoping for going into the shared conversations. And some have therefore declared that the whole thing was a waste of time and money, which is a real shame, as I believe that it had good intentions. If I may make two suggestions for how this process may have been improved. First, if no conclusions were intended to be drawn from the shared conversations process, then they should not have asked us to gather our thoughts at the end on the final day. And secondly, rather than include a report from the House of Bishops straight after the end of the shared conversations, have left more time for reflection and for building on the positive but delicate new relationships achieved in that process.
The prolocutor, followed by Zoe Hemming.
Chair, thank you very much. Simon Butler, Southwark 219. I'd like to thank the Chair of the Business Committee for her report and for the good offices in the past week in addressing the issue of the group work surrounding 2055. Can I go over there? Thank you.
May I start again? I'd like to thank the Chair of the Business Committee for her good offices in the past week about the group work issue. Both the Prolocutor of York and I recognise that despite our shared wish for the group work to be cancelled, the decision to do that rests not with the Business Committee, but with the President. I'm aware that conversations are ongoing about possible alternative pathways, and hopefully we might find some compromise. So what I think it would help the Presidents and the Business Committee to appreciate is there are a number of times when pastoral necessity outweighs planned procedural pathway. Remember the revision stage of the first women bishops legislation? We all vowed we didn't want to do that to one another again. So the reaction to the content of 2055 is first and foremost a cry of pain from many LGBT Anglicans and others. I understand that this does appear to have come as a surprise to many in the House of Bishops. So recognising that reality, the question is how to approach our procedures in this synod. So first, I ask about safeguarding. What safeguarding advice has the Business Committee taken in deciding the format of the group work? Do the Presidents believe the risk of emotional harm has been mitigated by the structure, ability of leaders, and format? Second, what guarantee do clergy who hold bishops' licenses have that despite the St. Michael's protocols being in place, any disclosures made in these groups will not affect their ability to seek appointment in the dioceses of bishops who happen to be in their allocated group? What is to prevent a bishop or another member of a group from making a complaint under the CDM from anything disclosed in the groups? And if you don't think that's serious, at 3:02 this afternoon, I had a text from a member of this synod about my personal life, asking questions. Its emotional intelligence was crass. It's borderline harassment. Third, given the clear condemnation of homophobia in 2055, can the Presidents be confident that members of the House of Chairs of Groups are able to recognise homophobia and abuse from other group members, even when dressed in theological clothes? Ironically, the conduct of our discussion in open debate, rather than through the artificiality of theoretical case studies, seems to me to offer a safer, more honest context for sharing our reactions with one another. The ground rules are clearer, the words of members are recorded, and the bishops would be able to play a full part in debate rather than the near impossible task of trying to facilitate a group while being at the same time the focus of a great deal of contentious emotion. So I'd like to ask for a meeting with the Presidents, the Chair of the House of Laity, the Prolocutors, and with a member of the National Safeguarding Team to talk through these things before a final decision is made about Wednesday afternoon's format. Thank you.
Zoe Hemming, followed by the Bishop of Southwark.
Hemming, Lichfield 145. Thank you, Chair, and conveniently already parked by the one working mic. I also wish to ask the Business Committee to use the greatest possible freedom available to reconsider the decision to include group work of case studies during this session. Given the shock and anger over the content and tone of GS 2055, a longer debate would be a safer space for LGBTI members to engage and be heard when the report does not adequately demonstrate that they have been. I imagine many of us have received many emails recently, shocked, wounded, heartbreaking personal stories from gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender members of our church, incidentally, none of whom identified as same-sex attracted. One such member particularly noted how he feels being considered a case study degrading, as a choice made instead of including actual people. He wished to be treated humanely as a faithful follower of Christ, who incidentally spent years praying for God to heal him of his sexuality until he realized that God was giving him a gift and calling him to serve this church as a priest. He has a very fruitful ministry. He likens the exclusion of any openly gay people from the Bishop's Reflection Group to a group of white people considering the inclusion of ethnic minorities, or indeed a working group on disability filled only with able-bodied people. This would never be tolerated and can only delegitimize the work that follows and worsen the suspicion and alienation. It is unreasonable to expect those feeling unsafe to participate in this group work, and it's likely that LGBTI members and their supporters may be absent, which would only deepen division rather than work towards good disagreement. It will be counterproductive. Please reconsider.
The Bishop of Southwark, followed by Canon Jane Sharman.
Christopher Chesson, Southwark 39. I'm grateful to the Chair of the Business Committee for proposing the agenda, of which I am supportive. One omission, and I wonder if the Chair would recommend to the Presidents that they give consideration to sending a message to government expressing our profound regret over the volte-face over the Dubs Amendment. Thank you.
Canon Jane Sharman, and then I'm minded to take one more speech from Simon Bayes, and then after that I would welcome a motion for closure if anyone is minded so to propose one.
Thank you. Jane Charman, Salisbury 211. A week used to be a long time in politics. These days, 24 hours is a long time in politics. So it's no criticism of the business committee that our agenda for this group of sessions makes no mention of some of the most unprecedented events in recent history which have recently arisen. The executive order suspending refugee resettlement and blocking individuals from seven majority Muslim countries from entering the US has caused international concern and condemnation. The response of the UK government is widely seen as inadequate and weak, and the repealing last week of the Dubs Amendment to give safe passage to unaccompanied child refugees shows with alarming clarity where things may be tending in this country unless they are very firmly resisted. These are matters that properly concern this synod. Can we not make space during our 4 days together to engage with them? Of course we have a full agenda. We always have a full agenda because we always fill it up. But not all the scheduled items are time critical. With the exception of setting God's people free and possibly the item on fixed odds betting terminals, it is also an inward-looking agenda, including a whole afternoon on an item which clearly traumatizes us but causes little anxiety to anyone else in our society. By contrast, the recent actions of the US and UK governments will have a direct impact on UK citizens and on some of the most vulnerable people in our world, whom Christ specifically commands us to protect and assist. We will rightly be criticised if we spend long hours discussing our own internal affairs and not responding to urgent events on the world stage which are causing harm and suffering to so many. Under standing orders, any adjustment to the agenda at this stage rests with the President. An additional debate is not necessarily the answer, but surely something is needed. Archbishop Justin, you and the Archbishop of York have taken a commendable public stand on these issues, but we should not expect you to tackle them single-handedly on our behalf. As Christians and as a national church, we have a responsibility and a desire to speak out. Can you find an appropriate way of enabling us to do that within the envelope of this synod? Thank you.
Mr. Simon Baines.
Simon Baines, 394 St. Albans. Madam Chair, I'll be very brief. We've heard much about the arrangements for Wednesday afternoon. Given the importance of a debate that we shall be having on GS 2055, I want to say that the time set aside for debate on Wednesday seems to be totally inadequate. A huge amount of time, effort, money, and heartache has gone into the shared conversations. And I simply cannot understand why only 90 minutes has been allocated for debate on this important topic. Basically, once the Bishop of Norwich has been given 10 minutes to introduce the motion and 5 minutes to sum up the debate, we shall be left with slightly less than 75 minutes. And even if the speech limit is reduced to 3 minutes for all speakers, simple arithmetic tells me at most 25 members of Synod will get to speak. I would imagine many times that number will wish to speak, and most will go home disappointed. Madam Chair, I should like to ask the President to liaise with the Business Committee about the possibility of extending that debate. Thank you.
Point of order. Point of order. That has my consent, and so we now have before us a motion for the closure of this debate, on which I will call a vote. Those in favour, please show. Those against, please show. That is clearly carried. And so I now invite the Chair of the Business Committee to reply. Canon Boys, you have up to 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. I want to begin by thanking all members of Synod, those who have spoken and those who haven't, for their careful consideration of this agenda. And I want to follow that thanks by thanking Jane O'Zan, Simon Butler and Zoe Hemmings in particular for what I think are costly and heartfelt speeches that I believe expressed the views of a number of you. I take the criticisms about the agenda on the chin. It is perhaps not the agenda that I would write this afternoon. Canon Butler spoke particularly about safeguarding advice. I took some advice on safeguarding this morning, and I was advised that there are no specific safeguarding issues of which we are aware. But I'm conscious that at a time like this, when people are feeling extremely vulnerable, that sense of needing to feel safe is an extreme and a sharp one. It is clear to me that each one of us in this chamber has a responsibility to each other one of us for the feelings of safety. And I am distressed to have heard of the text which Canon Butler spoke about in his speech. I'm grateful to the Bishop of Southwark and Canon Charman for drawing our attention to items of national and current interest which I agree it would be great to have on the agenda and which might have received our attention had we not been meeting in early December. I need to tell you that whilst I acknowledge that the time allocated for debate seems inadequate, the business committee has no freedom in terms of the starting time of the afternoon sitting that is published in the agenda. Our agenda and the report which introduce it are documents that belong to the business committee. When we meet to consider that agenda, we do so in the light of requests that come to us from different houses, boards, and councils, and we do the best job that we can in putting together an agenda that seems as if it will reflect the needs that have come to us. If you are genuinely dissatisfied with the form of the agenda, it seems to me that one option that is open to you is to refuse to take note of the report standing in my name. Thank you.
I now put item 2, that the Synod do take note of this report, to the vote. Will all those in favour please show? Will those against please show? The motion is carried. Thank you.